With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
It's Thursday, and you know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Brody Lee on the podcast. Well, you normally don't start that way, but I felt like it would be weird if we didn't start the podcast with you that way.
I mean, anyway. I just discontinued it, so probably a good
what?
Time to...
Yeah. Bullshit. Anyway, this is AEW Unrestricted. Hi, everyone. I'm Aubrey Edwards with my lovely co-host, Tony Schiavone.
Lovely.
How you doing, you bitch?
Wait, you talking to me?
Who are you talking to? Which one?
I was talking to Aubrey because before we started rolling tape here, she was giving me a hard time. So I was
giving you a hard time because you weren't getting your shit together. Like, we already started 15 minutes late, and I'm dealing with your bullshit.
Yeah, Tony was late.
Sorry.
Tony was late.
Hey, Brody, sorry you had to get involved in this, but it's good to see you, my friend. How you doing?
Hey, good to see you, too. You know, I appreciate that I could accommodate you guys.
Thanks for joining us this week on Unrestricted.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I had such a fun time last time while driving in a car, trying to not die. I actually decided to be stationary for this one.
Yes.
Yeah, you told us before your 8-year-old son was sleeping with the TNT title. How did he take the fact that you don't have it anymore? How did he take to that?
So, as you know, in that match, I was quite injured, looked horrible. Yeah, it was probably not what an 8-year-old wants to see. And he cried. But the only thing he mentioned was not my health, not was dad okay. It was, you lost the title. So he took it very roughly. Yeah.
Yeah.
The kid understands the importance of the belt.
He then turns and said, well, now you need to take the tag team title because that's what you do now. You take titles. And I said, you're
grab it and leave.
I said, bro, you're a great booker. You're hired.
Oh my God. Let's talk a little bit about the dog collar match. Cause it was insane. Ooh. And it was bloody and extremely, extremely well done. Like, you and Cody have amazing chemistry. The storytelling was fantastic. But I mean, ultimately the match was super, super memorable. So how does something like that come together? Did Cody propose it? Did you propose it? Give us a little bit of behind the scenes.
In a very actually roundabout cool story, one of my favorite matches of all time is Piper versus Valentine 1983, the dog collar match, which I've watched tons of millions of times. So when discussion of what should the big match be that we do, I almost jokingly threw out, let's do a dog collar match. And everyone goes, yeah, that's a great idea. And I was like, oh my God. So then the day of, they say, hey, Valentine's coming and he wants to talk to you. So, it was unreal. Then after the match, he pulled us aside, put the match over, said how impressed he was, like how much he loved it. And it was crazy. And then they had that great shot of him at the end,
right,
of him just applauding. I haven't watched the match back. I've only seen clips because I just want to leave it as it is. Feels very special to me. It also sucks the result. So I'm going to leave it where it is for a little while. I'll get vodka drunk at some point and watch it back late at night.
I like the specific vodka drink.
Tito's only.
Tito's only.
But we just got off of a phone call about not, these sponsorships. So I wanted to be careful, just say a very general vodka.
There you go.
But if Tito's Vodka wanted to sponsor me, I'd be very happy about that.
Well, they are the vodka for dog lovers, as you can hear in the background already, right?
I have the dog dish.
There you go.
And it says that.
Yeah, it was a tremendous match, but Brody, it was also a dangerous match. You guys, and I know, we all kind of talked about it beforehand, the length of the chain and so many parameters, so many things can go wrong and something like that. I mean, that was a dangerous thing to get into.
Yeah, a couple weird things. We were presented a couple different chains and options, and we went with what you saw on TV, mainly because it looked good on TV. That was not beneficial to my neck to have that strapped around me and then carrying around for 20 minutes while another man is trying to kill me.
Define how a chain looks good on TV versus not.
Bigger and makes better sound.
Makes sense. Okay.
Which in turn hurts more.
Yeah, no, totally.
So I did this for the fans. I just want them to know that. But I talked to a few people a few days after the match. I ride Peloton a lot. And the day, yes! I think Thursday, I don't know if it was Thursday or Friday, I quit a ride for the first time. I was about 20 minutes in. And I said, I can't do this. And my body was just not proper. I think I'm slowly getting, just 2 weeks out now, and I'm slowly getting normal again, worked out. But like, I think I left a piece of me in there. So,
oh, damn.
But yeah, but I'm happy with it. Yeah.
So AEW has been really great opportunity to let you shine on the microphone. Mm-hmm. Talk about having the creative freedom.
It's unreal. It's nerve wracking. I think I mentioned it before, the anxiety and stuff like that of now there's nobody to blame. There's nobody to say, hey, you weren't good because someone wrote this for you. It's now, hey, you wrote this, you performed it, and it sucked. Or it was amazing. Either way, but like, you now have to be prepared to deal with that kind of stuff. And I am. I'm ready for it. That's what I've always wanted. I talked about the dog collar match. These are the moments and the kinds of things that I yearned for years. I wanted to be a professional wrestler. I wanted to be a successful professional wrestler. And I wanted to get into these gritty and grimy feuds that have these crazy matches that mean something. And I was never given that opportunity at the other place. And I've already been given that opportunity several times here.
Let's talk about the development of the Exalted One. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was a storyline we had heard about a lot going forward in AEW in its first year. And then all of a sudden it's Mr. Brody Lee, who's the Exalted One. When did you find out that was going to be your character coming into AEW?
It had been mentioned to me as kind of an option, but not a clear direction. Mm-hmm. Until a few weeks before. And then they were kind of deciding to debut me and Matt on the same day in Rochester. So it kind of all fell together at the same time and was pretty crazy opportunity to have to be in my hometown to re-debut and to like almost be born again.
Womp womp.
As for the character, I was a little unsure of it just because I have never done anything like that. So being a background dancer for so long, you get bits and pieces from people and you try to put the best foot forward that you can as a leader now. So I try to do that on stage and backstage also. And then I was termed a leader by somebody in the office a few weeks ago, and I was appalled that they would ever have said that about me.
Of course.
But I think at this point now, maybe that's where I'm getting to.
So what was the decision to sort of wear the suits in? There was a lot of the earlier promos had a very, very Vince vibe, obviously.
Yes.
And the suits have still become sort of the namestay. Like, Brody Lee is a very well-dressed man.
Yes. Once I wore that first suit, it felt good, but it didn't feel completely right. The Vince McMahon comparisons flew. That's all people talked about the first 3 to 4 weeks of my right. AEW career. And that became, I think, detrimental to me. And I didn't like it. I didn't want it. So I tried to get away from the stuff that they were saying. So as opposed to a multicolored suit, I now went with a full suit tailored to me that I don't think looks anything like a Vince McMahon or anybody else. And once I did that red one, I was like, I'm sold. This is my bi-monthly, routine now, is to go get a suit made. And it's, I love it. So yeah, I think it was very important to get as far away as I could from Luke Harper. And this was probably the way to do it also, but it was so stark and so, the contrast was so much. I know I can't think of the word right now, but like, so just so different.
Sure.
I think people were thrown off by it for a long time, and it took, and I think I was thrown off by it for a while too, and didn't really find my footing for a month or two in.
You are Mr. Brody Lee and you're a badass on Dynamite.
Sure.
Now let's go to Mr. Brody Lee on Being the Elite.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
that's an entertaining thing because I've been involved in some of your stuff.
So are you saying that my Dynamite character is not entertaining? Is that what I'm to?
No, entertaining in a different way.
Yes. Thank you very much, Aubrey. You're not a bitch anymore. Thank you for bailing me out of that.
No, I'm bailing you out, Tony.
Okay. No, you're different.
Intense.
You're entertaining
very
in different ways.
Yeah, I after the first few bits of BT hit and were successful, I may have been heard to tell my friends that I was the best, most well-rounded professional wrestler in the world at this current time. And I feel that in ring, in a serious promo, comedy, and just all around, I'm the best in the world right now.
I mean,
and I think BT and Dynamite prove it.
Yeah, it's hard to be argued, man. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, you are well-rounded. Yeah.
A roll of papers has never been more terrifying or hilarious than it has been in recent months.
Yeah. Hey, you got to keep people in line, and you know, different people have different tactics, and you know, mine just happens to be very effective so far.
Is there a certain moment that like everything like clicked for you as far as like maybe the Brody Lee on Dynamite versus the Brody Lee on BTE?
That's a great question. I think honestly, the promo I cut on Cody challenging him for the match the week after.
Oh, the yelling the one in the
yes, where we did it in the hallway at Silver and Reynolds there. I think I went in and literally didn't. I had some thoughts in my head and I said, you know what? I'm just going to go in. And it was Jess, of course. And she goes, well, what do you have in mind? I said, I don't know, but I just want to, this is kind of how I want to present it. And whatever comes out, comes out. And I think we did it twice. And she's like, are you happy? I was like, yeah. She's like, I was like, are you happy? She goes, yeah. Cause I trust Jess very much. And when it was shot and shown, I was like, man, that was so powerful because it was stuff that I believed in. It was things that were real to me. And I had people tell me like, man, we could feel you, what you're saying, like you are so into it. And I was like, yeah, cause it's real. And so that was kind of the turn. I was like, oh my God, I need to start understanding not to script out everything word for word. Cause I'll get lost. But have these ideas in my head that I want to say, and then just go out and scream them, and just intensity and passion. And it sometimes it doesn't matter what you say, but how you say it, and learning that was very important to me. And then just the opportunity and the reps of getting it over and over and over. Like I crave TV time now, where there was a time I was terrified of it, where it was like, oh, you have a 20-minute match. And then I knew, oh, no problem, I'm good in the ring. But if they were like, hey, you have a 10-minute promo, it's like, oh shit, what do I do? Now it's like, I want that 10-minute promo. I crave it. So yeah, it hit and it feels good. And I don't know the exact moment, but I feel like that promo with Cody and then the BT leading up to that was kind of the turning point to where we are now.
Yeah. You do know, and I know you know all the old school stuff, but that was the way guys got over, and that was doing promos and using themselves, being themselves, yep. Or
100%
not being scripted. Dusty Rhodes, yep. Ric Flair, Jim Cornette, Roddy Piper, you know, yep. Those guys, they just went out and talked.
Yep.
And that was the way, I mean, that's really old school stuff.
And that was kind of the thing that I was never given the opportunity to do the last 8 years. And right. To my fault, I didn't master it. So I kind of threw some time away too, because I had resources that I didn't use possibly. So when now it's like a second chance and it's like, there's no way I can give this one back. And it's like, okay, now it's time to step up or get the fuck out.
We're talking with Brody Lee on AEW Unrestricted. Huge, huge impact you've had so far on Dynamite. We're going to talk a little bit more about your background.
We're talking with Brody Lee, who is an instrumental part of the success of AEW right now. Exalted One, leader of the Dark Order, all around good guy and well-rounded, as we found out from talking to him in the first segment. Not only from on being the elite, but
I don't know who's judging that other than me, but I'm it's on the board and I'm counting it.
Yeah. I want to talk to about your background, and we need to. Okay. But before I do, I want to go back to just one thing, touch on that you said earlier. It really had to be, and I think we touched on this when you and I talked when we talked on our 100th or the 1 year anniversary show. It had to be really disappointing that you were unable to make your debut in Rochester, New York.
Yeah, it was. It shook me. It was heartbreaking, honestly. Every time I'd been to Rochester with WWE, it had been literally a wonderful experience, whether it was I was in a dark match or whether I was in the main event, because I had done it all in Rochester and house shows. I'd been in the main, I'd been in the dark match before TV there. But no matter what, the people were happy. They were there. The advance to this AEW show was great, which gave me just huge confidence, because there was rumors, but nothing had been said. But people in Rochester knew that it was the time that my contract was free. And that it was serendipitous. And yeah, that day that it didn't happen, where I think you talked about before, where Trump had his address about COVID, Tom Hanks said he had COVID, and Rudy Gobert did the thing, and the NBA canceled their season the next day.
Yeah.
And that was a week before, literally a week before. You guys were in Salt Lake.
Yep.
Right.
And I went to bed thinking, okay, you know, because we've never been through anything like this, so who knew? So I went to bed thinking, this feels okay, you know, everyone, they'll get it in control and everything will be fine. And then once the NBA season went down and the NHL started, and then it was just like, oh my God, this is a legitimate concern for everybody in the world. And right. Yeah, it sucked. then I knew it wasn't happening. And that's where Tony said, look, we can do this at Daly's place in Jacksonville. We're going to run here. He goes, if you don't want to, I completely understand. But I had been off TV, I think, for 8 months or maybe even a year at that point. I'm not even sure. But for a while, off and on. And I was just ready to be a professional wrestler, like I talked about. And I didn't care what the situation was. Of course, after those first couple of appearances, I was like, man, this is very different. Because I watched the product. I watched AEW, and, you know, the crowds. And just what a dream that would have been in Rochester.
Sure. Right.
Oh, man.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, someday.
Yeah, you'll get your chance. Because we were going to have a gigantic crowd that night. That was going to be a big night for us.
That was that night in New Jersey. The Blood and Guts cage was Blood the next guts. Week. Yes. So it was going to be a pretty awesome start. Instead, I did it in front of Zero at Daly's place.
Yep. Right.
There were like two, maybe. Our guys.
13.
13.
Yeah, 13. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And though, I think now, though, like I've gotten so accustomed to it now, it might feel weird when people are back in the stands. There might be too much energy happening because I'm fired up now. Yeah, I mean, I'm bludgeoning men, you know, for a bad pun. As Vince literally named us that, because when we asked, why did you name us that? He said, bludgeon, it's an action. You can feel it. And I literally just use it as an action, you know, so, okay. He's right.
Apparently it works.
Maybe I was the one who was wrong.
Yeah. The verb. It's a verb. Okay. Let's go back and talk about your start. You were a backyard wrestler along with your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also there's a young man named Chris Harrington that you may or may not know that also participated in the backyard with me.
Whoa.
Wait a minute.
Hold up.
That wimp took some bumps.
Not well, and not many.
Man, I got some stories when I see him next time.
This is going to open up many videos and pictures of old me to be put into the wilderness. So this may have been a mistake by me. But yes, that's where we started.
This is not a mistake. This is not a mistake at all.
Yeah, we did that. And then I think Chris's group with his group of friends actually had gotten a ring, and they invited me down to just be, you know, we were putting our own thing together. And from there, we still weren't trained, but we then had a spot where we could run shows. And we ran our own shows. It was like a karate dojo. The guy was very cool about everything. We had like maybe 150 seats in there. We used to fill it up. Yeah, it was unbelievable. So then when we kind of figured that out, from there, we started to actually train. And then from there, I mean, I like to tell people I'm very poorly trained. And if you watch me wrestle closely, you can tell I'm poorly trained. My footwork's horrible. There's a lot of things that are just terrible that I do. But literally in the middle of training, we just kind of went on the road and figured it out from there. And that was probably 2003.
Okay.
Oh, what was your first gimmick?
Huber Boy 2, which is my real last name. And we were going to have a big group of Huber Boys. And it only ended up being me because my brother turned out to be a referee and a chemist. And never wrestled. So I was Huber Boy 2. I had number 2s all over me. And yeah, there was no number 1. He was a referee.
Yeah. Did you wrestle under a mask as Huber Boy 2?
Probably at some point.
Okay. You did wrestle under a mask though, right?
Not regular.
Okay.
I don't know where you're getting your information from, Tony. I don't know if I can trust you anymore.
That's from Aubrey. Got it from her.
Bullshit.
Okay.
Fuck you, Tony.
You were also okay. Let's see if this one's correct. Uh-oh. That we got from Aubrey. You were into tape trading too, right?
Huge.
Oh, yeah. Totally mine.
Yeah.
How did that start? How did that start for you?
So it's funny now. I just moved down to Tampa, Florida, and in the move, we have these two giant bins of just VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And my wife's like, "Well, what do you want to do with them?" And she could care less one way or the other. We have the space to put them in storage or whatever. And I used contemplated throwing them away, and I could not bring myself to do it.
Right.
Just two giant bins of these tapes that I'll never watch, that I have available everywhere else to me now, but I just can't. Right. I just can't do it. I don't know how it started. Somewhere around the point of Ring of Honor starting, I think in 2000, maybe 2001, that's how that promotion was built, on tape trading. And we kind of would get the RF Video catalogs, and I was a big ECW fan. So then when these fan cams were available to me, I said, oh, well, let's try to watch the show this way. And then from there, I would buy like a Best of the Independence 2000, and Chris Daniels would be tearing it up, you know, like three different gimmicks, you know. And it was like, I was hooked. And then from there, it was just like, you get these best ofs, and then you just pick the guys that you want, and you'd buy every Ring of Honor show. And then I was doing Ring Crew for Ring of Honor early with Dunn and Marcos. I'd travel up with them and the Carnage crew and do Ring Crew for a lot of these real early shows. And like, I think that taught me how the business, like, not the glamorous part of the business, but the real shitty part of the business was. And I was okay with it, which is a key aspect of success in pro wrestling.
Right. You kind of have to know how to deal with the shit.
We're told, I think Dr. Tom said, do you like the taste of shit? And, you know, he goes, well, you probably should, because you're going to eat a lot of it. And like, that was his advice in getting into the business.
That's actually true. Pretty good.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah.
But I could never, there's zero regrets. It was the best time of my life.
Oh yeah. The amount of friends you make on like really shitty situations being on the indies. You're
exactly.
Like, these are the best times of my life.
Exactly.
These are so great. Speaking of indies, you were Brody Lee on the indies before you got signed, correct?
I was. 2007, we were in a diner, and I think it was Lit from Special K sitting across from me, and he's like, we were trying to think of a new name for me, because I think Hero Boy 2 wasn't very marketable as you.
No.
I don't know. I disagree, but. And he said, boy, you look like, I can't think of his name now, Brody Bruce in Mallrats.
Jason Lee.
Yes, Jason Lee. And he's like, you look just, because I had kind of very trimmed down. And if I shave now, I look like Jason Lee. And he said, you should be, you know, Brody Bruce's name in Mallrats. So he's like, you should be Brody, and then use his last name Lee. And I was like, huh, that's great. And Kevin Dunn from the Ring Crew Express will tell you that he was the one that had that conversation with me. But I believe it was Lit from Special K, so who gave me my name. So I think that was 2007. And then that's where I ended up in Chikara. I was just on a road trip with the Olsen twins, and Reckless Youth no-showed. It was a Sunday show, I think in Hellertown. Reckless Youth no-showed a show. And Mike Quackenbush looked over and he goes, hey, did you bring your gear? And I said, yes, I did. And that was how my super indie career kind of began. And that's where it started to like progress kind of then around the world, and then Ring of Honor in 2009.
Your first name, Brody.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just your, I don't know, the way you, the look in the ring, I guess, reminds us of Bruiser Brody. You realize that, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, love him. I mean, that's one of the huge tape was, I had so many of him, you know, all over the world. Him and Terry Funk, him and Abdul, just, so these crazy matches that I was in love with. And I finally got to do one 2 weeks ago.
Sure. Did you ever have a chance to meet Terry Funk?
I've just very briefly at an indie show. He was getting taken out to go back to the hotel, and just very briefly got to say hi to him. But literally, probably my favorite professional wrestler of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, very cool.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go through your debuts or your some of your highlights. 2002 Rock City Wrestling debut.
Yep. I believe that was 2001. And I only remember this because my father passed away in 2001. I debuted a month after he passed away, and he never got to see me. So it was a little heartbreaking, but I don't want to be sad. It's okay. But that's how I remember it was 2001. Because Alex came up to me last week, and he said, hey, you debuted on this day in 2003. I said, I'm pretty sure I debuted in 2001. And then some research, he goes, yeah, you did. So yeah,
Alex Marvez got a stat wrong.
Yes, he did. And
I'm
so sorry for stooging you off, Alex.
He's a fraud.
But the Rock City Wrestling was the one that we kind of put together by ourselves, and it was like almost a boxing ring. So I probably mounted up some early injuries there. We would run monthly, and Chris Harrington was also a member of that group. Mm.
Man. Well, I've got a lot of fodder for him, I can tell you that.
We're going to have Chris Harrington on the podcast. I have a lot of questions.
I don't know if that'll work out for me.
No. It's like, why is suddenly Brody not getting booked on Dynamite anymore? Who's he have heat with? I don't understand.
Does he have that much power? Fuck.
He runs AEW.
I know.
Quintessential guys.
I know. That's bad for AEW, maybe.
So in 2010, you went to Dragon Gate in Japan.
Yep. So that's
ended
a
up
funny
working with fun story. Go.
I was just going to say, so I'm in WXW Wrestling Bad Bones, and all the Dragon Gate guys had come over for a tour to WXW. And Bad Bones like, oh, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to do fucking everything. I want to do a Rana. I want to do all this crazy shit. He goes, why? I go, because this is what these people like. And I'm very big and I think they'll like it. So we did it. And literally that night, Shima came up to me and he goes, hey, do you want to come to Japan? And I was like, yes. And then so went home, like we had the contact and went to Dragon Gate, and Shima was couldn't have been a sweeter person, human being to me, like just a wonderful person. That's where I met Ben Pack. That's where I met Trevor Ricochet. We all stayed together. Rich Swann. They were all so. Rich Swann, Ricochet, and Pack were all on the same tours as me. And it's just insane to think of those three, the amount of talent just in the room that I was in. So
absolutely, yeah.
So I think that's where I learned to almost keep up and not have a plodding, methodical style almost, which I had to relearn when I came back. But like that's almost. And that's today's style. So I think I'm kind of, that's where I learned, started to learn it.
Okay. So you were signed with WWE and sent to developmental in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like?
So about 6 months earlier, I had been in contact with somebody there and was getting ready to go down for one of their tryouts. I broke my leg, dislocated my patella. Lost my shoe job. And then a week later, my wife told me that she was pregnant. Unplanned. So, and it was mine. So it was okay.
That was going to be my next question, but I didn't know if it was rude to ask.
So then the world was ending, you know, but then 6 months after that, they called me again and said, hey, are you healthy? And I said, actually, yeah, just got cleared. He said, hey, can you come down January 1st? So my son's now scheduled to be born early January.
Uh-oh.
Yep. And so I'm traveling to Tampa from Rochester to do this week long tryout. So my wife said, you know, no problem, go ahead. So the baby did not come out. The week happened, and then January 17th, we're in the hospital having the baby, and that's when Johnny Ace called me. The phone breaks up. So I think, of course, I've ruined my entire opportunity at pro wrestling stardom. I don't have his number because it cut off. So I call Claudio, and I'm like, oh, my God, you have Johnny Ace's number? And he goes, yeah, here it is. Texted to me. I call him. I said, Johnny, I'm so sorry I missed your phone call. He goes, oh, no problem. He goes, hey, do you want to work here? And I said, yeah. And yeah, got hired the day my son was born.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Great story.
So it's pretty cool.
Tremendous story. Yeah. So let's talk about how the Wyatt family idea was presented to you.
I don't know if either of you have met Bray Wyatt, but he is a very intense human being. And before I was even hired, Claudio calls me. And we never called each other. So I pick it up and I say, hey, man. He goes, hey, you know, we hear you might get, I was just almost maybe getting signed at this point. Nothing had been signed. He goes, hey, but somebody wants to talk to you. He gets on the phone and it's a man I've never met, never spoken to, nothing. And he, for the next 10 minutes, rattles off these ideas of what the Wyatt family became. And then he goes, all right, man, I'll see you later. And then Claudio gets back on. He goes, yeah, Bray, he really wanted to talk to you. He knew you were coming here. He just really wanted to talk to you. And I go, well, what happens now if I don't get signed? Is he going to be really, really upset? So, but literally everything he said was exactly what he wanted to present it that way. And I just happened to fit in perfectly at the time. And I didn't change a thing from when I was on the indies at that point.
So is there anything that you had hoped the character would be that maybe?
I thought it was a really great step into that world. I always hoped that it would progress from there and become an actual character. We used to get asked all the time, like, well, what is your character? And then I would point out how somebody else on the roster's character had been fleshed out through a series of feuds or storylines or things that they did on air, not just like, hey, here's this character. He delivers cookies or whatever, like some stupid shit that's a gimmick. So I always was hoped that it would flesh out somewhere from behind Bray to the forefront, and it just never happened.
All right. So now the Bludgeon Brothers become a reality, you and Eric Rowan together. The crowd reaction was huge, positive for you guys when you first started. So what do you think happened?
Yep. So literally every time that an idea for me or Rowan would come to fruition, it would instantly, in a singles idea, it would instantly be right. Taken to a certain level and then be like, you know what? I think we're just going to put them back together as a tag team. And we did it 3 times and we were always happy to do it. The Bludgeon Brothers, looking back, was a very cool run. Mm-hmm. I think it's underrated because we never really had the big matches except for with the New Day and the Usos one time. So we never had those big matches that people could sink their teeth into.
Sure.
But as an eight-month run, it was awesome. And I don't know where it was going to go. Rowan got hurt, tore his bicep at the end, and it just kind of disintegrated everything. And, yeah, I was sent home eventually.
Okay. Well, bludgeon is a verb.
It's an action.
It's an action. It's an action word.
You can feel it.
Feel it.
Okay.
Said, sure,
we
man.
Do have a shit ton of fan questions for Mr. Boy. Brody Lee that we're going to get to here on AEW Unrestricted.
Mr. Brody Lee, the Exalted One of the Dark Order, is with us here on AEW Unrestricted. We have a few fan questions, but before we get into that...
I thought it was a shit ton.
A few. It's on the spectrum between a few and a shit ton. Fair. So good between save, good save. Two good save. And a million.
Well played.
So your DMs on Twitter have always been open.
Wide open.
So before we get into the questions, has there any been, like, what's the funniest, craziest thing you've gotten?
Oh, man, I don't know. I've had a couple, I don't know. Surprisingly, I don't get anything too crazy because I don't respond too much to the opening crazy. So if the opening's crazy, I'll kind of let that one settle. I say thank you a lot and stuff like that. But I never really engage too much. I've had some hockey conversations on there, cool stuff like that. But honestly, nothing, which I open them up for the crazy, and it's been a little disappointing. And they're still open. I have 650 unread ones in there that I scroll through a few each day. I also have a lot of people send me the same stuff every single day that I notice.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah. I mean, so I put up the same thing every day, so I get how you can be mental like that, baby. So,
right.
I can't really fault them for that one. Yeah, I can't really fault them.
They're just copying your gimmick, man. It works.
But yeah, it's a bad answer, but I'm disappointed. So I'm sure when this comes out and I say this, I'm going to get all the weird shit.
All the dicks.
I have zero so far.
You've got zero dick pics.
John Silver tells me he gets...
Of course, Silver would get dick pics.
Zero. Oh, Lord, we didn't need to hear that one. Okay.
Johnny Hungy.
Of course he does. No. And we're done. Okay.
This is AEW Unrestricted, everybody.
No, I was going to say, I was told there's no lines here.
That's right. So you mentioned, Brody, you mentioned you're a big hockey fan.
Hold on, one more thing. I was tiptoeing around that answer. And then you made it very easy. Thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know where to go next.
Because I wanted to say zero dicks, but I didn't know if I could pull that off.
No, it's zero dicks. I mean, we literally just got done recording with Anna Jay, and we're like, oh, yeah, we're talking about dick pics, and now it like shows up as a filter, and you have to tap it to actually see it.
I feel like me and Anna Jay have vastly different DM material.
You would probably be right.
I would bet money that you definitely do.
Okay. Have we settled down now?
No.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. So, Brody, you're a big hockey fan.
I'm a humongous hockey fan.
Right.
I'll segue for you. Me and my son just kind of went to the Tampa Celebration in the arena. It was a smaller one. It wasn't the one at the football stadium. Yeah. It was the one in the Amalie. But we were like 20 feet from the cup. Stamkos, the owner, and a couple other people spoke, and it was just a real cool thing to share with my son to sit.
Sure.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. You're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan?
I am. Die hard. It's been a very tough existence, tough go. 1993, they went on a run to the conference finals, and I fell in love with the team. And I've been a fan. I've been a fan ever since. And Doug Gilmore was like my hero growing up. I still, the number 93 is still synonymous with everything I do. It's in my email.
Very cool.
So, that makes sense. Okay.
Yes. So they kind of, the Maple Leafs are very special to me, but literally the heartbreak year after year is mind numbing at this point.
That's how you know someone's a true fan.
Yeah.
When you like cheer for a shitty team after decades and you're still in it.
And the thing about them is they're supposed to be good now. They have like some of the best players in the world, the young. And I sat through the 10 to 12, 15 years of just misery. So now it's supposed to be the payoff and I'm not fucking getting it. So
nope. All right. Speaking of payoff, let's finally get to some fan questions.
Oh shit. I get paid a lot.
All right. We've got Chris 561 on Twitter. Are we ever going to get a dog in the Dark Order? Are you going to
A dog.
Take Pharaoh from Cody.
Yeah, to counter Pharaoh.
I have two dogs, five cats, two feral children. There's no telling who's going to come into the Dark Order.
Barnyard behind you, just with their little paws up.
If I brought my dogs, it might not be as exciting. They're very lazy. So I don't know. But they're good dogs. But I mean, if I had my way, yes, I'd have a dog tomorrow. Four of them.
Like a chariot.
I'm with you, buddy.
Yeah, I just don't want to have to handle them at TV. I want to be like those rich people who have kids but don't take care of them. So I want to have all these dogs, but I don't want to take care of my TV, but they can come home with me. A bad analogy?
No, boy, no, I had a line there, but I'm going to stay away from it, man. I'm going to stay away from it. I had a real uppercut to somebody, but I wasn't going to do it. Okay. Benjamin Porter, who is at Tingle Is My Hero on Twitter, please ask Brody, do you know what this day means? I assume he knows, but I don't.
Yeah, that's the funny part about all of this. I don't fucking know.
Well, it's caught on, right? Yeah, now we know what it means.
It's honestly become a bit of a self-reflection daily. And honestly, I stopped doing it after the dog collar match, and it feels odd to wake up and not do it.
Really?
But it's also freeing in a way. So I don't know which way I'm going to go with it in the next few days.
So when did that actually start? Like, what was the impetus for that?
Honestly, it became a countdown till my contract is over. I was on tour, and I can't remember that. I don't remember what country. I was going to say Chile, but I don't think it was. Somewhere on tour, and I literally had in my calendar, you can go on Google and type in how many days until, and I would do that like every 5 days to see how many days I had left in my contract. And I would tell people like little things like that just to keep myself like, it's coming. I know it's coming. And then they extended it. And so then I moved back and stuff like that. And so then it just became that to remind myself like, hey, this isn't going to be forever. There's going to be another opportunity somewhere, whether it's here or not. And this is where you can pay this tweet off. And so, yeah, it just became, yeah. And then, like I said, it became a self-reflection thing daily of like, okay, who knows what it means? Like I said, not me. And here's the other problem. I've given people ask me in interviews all the time, and I've always given different answers. So people will bring it back up to me, and I don't remember the answers I give. So the truth is I don't fucking know.
That's how most of the greatest things in wrestling work. Right. Like, I don't know. Right. I just, right. Something just wanted to do. All right. The Electrode on Twitter asks, do Dark Order members pick their own numbers, or are they assigned once they're joined?
They're 100% assigned. Anna Jay was the only one that I had a hand in. She's 99 because Wayne Gretzky wore 99. He was the great one. Mm-hmm. So it was my nod to hockey.
How about that? Yeah. How about that?
And I was very proud of that. Nobody gets it. Nobody cares except me.
That's all it's about, man. It's about
I thought it was from Get Smart.
That's Tony's thing. He thinks that, or he want is the same play. That's where he gets it from. And I was like, no, it's right. Wayne Gretzky.
Okay.
And Tony, as you may know, is a bit of a numbers guy. He has a hand in naming some of the others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a lot of a numbers guy.
So no one gets to choose. Not in my group.
Okay.
Not in my fucking
group. No, man. It's because you're the exalted right. one.
And also, a few of them had numbers before I got there, so I had no say. Mm-hmm.
Nick X Nothing on Twitter wants to know, if you could choose to add one wrestler from the past to the Dark Order, who would it be and why?
Terry Funk.
That's what I thought she would
say. Terry Funk. But I think the problem will be that he would eventually either kill me and I would not be the leader of the Dark Order anymore. Or, yeah, I don't know if it'd be beneficial to me as the leader to bring him in, but that would be the number one. Number two would probably be a Fit Finley, a guy like that. Just watching him, I've learned so much from him personally. And just, I was a huge fan of his, you know, another guy who I tape traded for. I have multiple Fit Finley tapes. And which is weird when you work with him for so many years to, you know, it's just surreal still to me.
Yeah. Such a mellow talking guy in the backstage area, but a real badass.
Real badass. Legit. Like, if I'm going to get in a fist fight and they say anybody in the world, I say, okay, well, where's Fit?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Got a question from B Money Daddy on Twitter.
Oh God.
I love that. I think my favorite part of these fan Q&A is just reading the names.
I was just going to say Nick Toxic 74.
XX Stoner XX 69.
No dicks. 74.
Dick 74.
Sorry,
93.
Tony. 93.
Dick picked to Aubrey, 75.
All right, Big Money Daddy, what coaches have offered you advice or strategy over the years? And if
could
be an advisor to the Dark Order?
Yeah, I think the one that I want is spoken for, Mr. Arn Anderson. Literally like a father figure to me in my WWE run. I remember some of my first times in just at TV, not knowing what to do with myself at ringside, just awkward. And he would come over and just talk to me. And then once I think he realized that I could handle myself and I'm a great worker, he then leaned into me even more. And I was told sometimes that he would put me over in these meetings, and he'll tell you this, he would put me over in these meetings, and he said it might have not been beneficial to me because he was so animate about it. But he said he saw something that was special, and he's just such a sweet, genuine human being. I'll always get an oddly timed text from Double just saying the sweetest things, like, you know, checking on my wife and kids and checking on me. He's just a wonderful man.
Yeah, he's a good man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really is.
I did beat the shit out of him twice, and my wife threatened to divorce me.
Mm-hmm.
She said, if you put your hands on Double again, it's over.
Well, make it a third time for me. Top Rope Squishy on Twitter says, how hard is this?
Sorry. Top Rope Squishy.
Top Rope Squishy. By the way, that's Maddie Anderson.
All right.
Thank you, Maddie, for this. Okay.
They give their real names after Top Rope Squishy. I mean, come on, man.
Sometimes they do.
We give it. We expose them. Okay. All right.
This
is a question we've asked of Anna Jay before. How hard is it to maintain your composure and not burst out laughing when filming Being the Elite? And are you yelling at John Silver and Anna Jay is attacking Stu Grayson?
Man, it is incredibly hard. If you've seen Silver do one of these things live, the shit that comes out of his mouth is outrageous. And just things that I would have never even thought about. He slapped 10's titties around 2 weeks ago and was looking for milk. And I turned around at this point and I said, what the fuck have I become?
You're an enabler.
I said, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't air this one. And then I said, you know what? Yes, we should.
I think that's like where the Johnny Hungy t-shirt came from. So now you're making the boy money.
Who knew? Who knew? But to be fair, I think we've only done a multiple take, I want to say twice.
Ooh.
So usually those are straight run throughs. And people crack throughout the bit. Usually when I'm cracking, I step back behind Brandon while he's filming. And so they can't see me laughing. But even if you see Anna Jay up in the corner, she's laughing. Reynolds is laughing. Mm-hmm. Uno has his mask, so he's okay. Stu, that motherfucker can keep it together. And I don't know how.
Oh, God. All right. The prestigious Johnny Boy, Juanito Beans on Twitter.
Juanito Beans.
Wait, what?
That's Juanito _ Beans.
Yes, correction. Thank you for that. Okay. So when you went to AEW, who was the one that you marked out for more when you appeared at your debut?
Was there choices?
I don't know.
Oh.
No. Just it's an open-ended question.
Who I marked out for?
Yeah.
Tony Schiavone. Or
did anyone mark out for you? Like either one?
A true legend in the business, Tony Schiavone. Tony, I'll just take this minute to answer this question this way because I don't have a good answer for that one. Do you ever sit back and just think about how much stuff you've seen and witnessed in professional wrestling? Do you ever and this is a legitimately honest question because I was watching you, I can't remember what year it was, doing an in-ring interview. And I was like, just the amount of history you've witnessed. Have you ever, does it ever dawn on you? Or like, how do you?
No, because Brody, a lot of the stuff has just kind of gone in one ear and out the other. But I can tell you this. I do sit back sometimes and think about all the stuff I missed.
Yeah.
I really do. And I regret that. I regret not following it.
Yeah.
Because after you started working with us, I didn't realize you were part of I didn't realize, you know, your history.
So you're saying after
I went back and saw
after 2000 or
after 2001, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how I regret.
Were you sour to the business at that point or?
No, I wasn't sour to the business. I just tried to do something else. That's all.
I got you.
But anyway, I just appreciate
it. It makes it even better that you came back now in AEW and like this huge, that makes it even cooler to me.
Yeah, I think it's all cool, but I appreciate you saying that. And
it's mind blowing.
We've had a good time. I mean, we have. I've had a great time working with you, even though I do need to say this. when you won the belt, mm-hmm. and I think I came in the ring to interview you.
Yep, absolutely.
You did grab me. You were pretty stiff when you grabbed me. I'm like, what the hell, son? That's some bitch strong. What did I do?
Slightly gassed up and like just a little worked up at that point.
You just won a belt.
You were pretty worked up. Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Giving the guy a hard time.
You gave me some wonderful advice that night.
Yep.
And I'll never forget it. So
what was the advice?
Okay, good.
I'm not going to tell you because you don't deserve to know.
Why don't I?
No. So I have a horrible habit of, and this is new to me because doing promos again, like I talked about, this is new to me. And doing one where an interviewer comes in the ring in a very intense situation where I'm going to be ranting and raving, it's all new to me. So what I was doing is I was going to find the microphone. So if the microphone was down here, I'd lean in and find it as opposed to letting Tony bring it up to me. And it was such a little thing. And honestly, AEW's production team saved me because if you look back, they come so tight on me when I'm talking, you can't even tell that I'm bending over. And it's masterful.
Right.
So when people talk about like, yeah, we're these great professional wrestlers, man, these production are making us this otherworldly superheroes, and just a little tiny thing like that, people would never even think about. I wouldn't even have thought about it. But after you mentioned it to me, I went back and watched it, and I was like, my God, they saved me. And it's just so well done.
Yeah, what I mentioned to him, Aubrey, and I've done this to a lot of guys, Cody's another one that says, stand up straight. You're big, you're strong. Let me bring the microphone up to you. Don't hunch over.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and like you said, like if especially in a promo like that where I'm supposed to be this domineering, you know, powerful, you know, badass all of a sudden, when I'm standing up tall, it's going to look so much more appealing, you know. So, yeah, I get it. And I just
intimidating.
wasn't thinking about it.
Damn.
Right. Yeah. The first interview that we ever did live on Dynamite was me and Cody. And I remember telling Cody that day, I said, stand up straight and I'll do the interview. Mm-hmm. And he didn't. Yeah. And I just grabbed him by the elbow.
I love it.
And squeezed the elbow. And he knew to stand up straight.
It.
So
I'll never forget it. I'll never find a microphone again. Find me.
There you go.
Because that's a whole other
thing.
How
about you, buddy?
Next time I'm going to hold her way down.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, come on, Tony, stop ribbing me. But that's a whole other thing is, this is such another little minute detail. But like, if you're a star, you let these people come to you and talk to you. You don't need to find them. I don't need to, you know, so that's just a little kayfabe minute detail that you made me think about.
Right.
It's fascinating.
All right.
I never deal with any of this shit because I just stand in the back and try not to get hit. So
you deal with a lot of other crazies. You deal with all the crazy people. I have to deal with one a night. You have to deal with all of them.
Most of them. Most of them. I had to deal with Billy Gunn. I'm tired of his bullshit.
Who isn't?
Okay.
I know. All right. So
is it my turn to ask one? Yes, I guess I am. Wolfinster. On Twitter.
Wolfinster.
Not that I mind the beard, and I know why you've got one, but I'm curious as to when we will see your face again.
My God.
I got it.
It's a great question. I don't know. Mm-hmm. My kids wouldn't recognize me. My wife likes it at this point. I don't know.
There you go.
That was the main hurdle to begin with, but I don't know. I like it. I got it trimmed way down for my debut, and it was it was strange even then. So I don't know. Someday. When I'm booking Dynamite in 2030, maybe I won't have a beard.
You're not ripping this out of Tony Khan's hands.
he can still have final say.
Well, speaking of beard, segueing to the next question, Drastic Fantastic on Twitter. Do you have any facial hair products that you would recommend?
Zero. I use none. And I feel like they're not necessary. Because, I mean, maybe mine's not groomed to the best of its ability. But I also feel that a beard shouldn't be completely neatly trimmed and groomed. It should look like this. And this is a, you know, a definition of my personality as well or some shit. I don't know.
Yep. No, it is. I get
poetic.
It.
Even for another weird character thing, I'm this well-dressed corporate boss, but when the bell rings, I still have this thing and these wild eyes and just little things like that where to separate the characters.
Got it. Great answer. And the right answer too, by the way.
Thank you. I've had so many things sent to me, you know, beard care. Never.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Hey, Brody, thanks, man.
Hey, thank you, guys. This was a blast.
This was awesome.
It's great having you with us, honestly. It's just...
I love it.
I was so excited that I found that you were coming in, and I think it's great. You've been a big part of what we're doing.
I love it, man. It's been refreshing to me. We talked about on the other podcast, Ben, this has been... Life saved my life, you know, as my career, I guess, you know, saved my career. So
sure.
This is wonderful.
Yeah. Your positivity is I mean, it knows no bounds. It's just like seeing how much like happiness you exude backstage. It's wonderful.
Yep.
Don't tell my wife.
Wouldn't dare.
Sure, she doesn't listen to this.
Wouldn't dare expose the gimmick.
She's baffled. She's baffled that people like me. I think it's because I have just such sick charisma and, you know, magnetability. Like it's just, I don't know, you know, she doesn't get it. But I said, you must get it because you married me. So,
yeah, exactly.
There you go. There you go, lady.
Awesome.
Yeah, you absolutely. Tell her, Tony.
I will.
Well, thank you, Brody.
Thank
for
you
those
very
listening,
much.
You can follow Brody Lee on Twitter, This Brody Lee. Subscribe to AEW Unrestricted Podcast for free wherever you get your podcast. New episodes every Thursday morning. And you can check out video versions of the podcast on YouTube. Just search for AEW Unrestricted.
And tune into AEW Dynamite Wednesdays, 8 o'clock, 7 central on TNT. My name is Tony Schiavone.
I'm Aubrey Edwards.
I'm Brody Lee.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Unrestricted.
Woohoo!